The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
So as we continue our practice together in this period, Melissa and I will offer a Dharma talk together. I'll start out and then turn it over to her. And it's our tradition at Boundless Way to look into a koan as the topic for our sesshin. These koan are stories that have been handed down, teaching stories written down in the 11th and 12th century from stories hundreds of years before, stories of teachers and students. Sometimes they're called encounter dialogues, sometimes teachers with teachers, but most often a student and a teacher. And this one-to-one encounter is what we do in Doksan, individual meetings with the teacher. These koan are not intellectual puzzles to be solved, but rather quite direct presentations of the great matter. We say the great matter, the Dharma, cannot be grasped. It cannot be explained. And so we offer these words not in explanation and not to make sure you understand, but maybe to make sure you don't understand, to open you, to invite you and ourselves into some deeper relationship with this great matter of life and death. And so we're looking into, in this sesshin, case number 7 from the Gateless Gate. And the title is Zhao Zhou's Wash Your Bowls. Zhao Zhou was one of the great Tang Dynasty Zen masters, lived in the 9th century, a great teacher known for his pithy words. He didn't say a lot, he didn't expound a lot, but in a few words he manages to get right to the heart of it. And so this is about an encounter between Zhao Zhou and a student. So a monk said to Zhao Zhou, "I have entered this monastery. Please teach me." A monk said to Zhao Zhou, "I have entered this monastery. Please teach me." Zhao Zhou said, "Have you eaten your rice gruel?" The monk said, "Yes, I have." Zhao Zhou said, "Wash your bowls." The monk understood. And there's a verse that the compiler, Wu Men, added to this, and his comment is, "Because it's so very clear, it takes so long to realize. If you just know that flame is fire, you'll find your rice has long been cooked." So this is quite a well-known koan, partly, I think, because it's easy to remember. But it refers to the practice in the monastery. Zhao Zhou, by this time, was a great and well-known teacher. And in medieval China, the monks would travel around once you had some experience under your belt, once you were seriously on the road. You would often go visit different teachers and ask for their teaching. And Zhao Zhou's response around rice gruel and wash your bowls refers to rice gruel was the standard breakfast at monasteries up early in the morning to practice Zazen and then eat rice gruel right there in the Dharma hall where you sat. And then, of course, after eating, you wash your bowls. So we enter these koan through many ways, but these stories are ultimately not about something that happened or may have happened in the 8th century or something that was written down in the 11th century, but about life itself and not about life in some generalized way, but your life and my life. And we study these koan not to learn about Chinese monks and Chan Zen teachers, but to learn about ourself. So we approach these koans as if it were, we might say, as if it were a dream. We dream into them, imagining ourselves to be occupying all the different positions. So you and I are this monk. This monk probably recently come to the monastery and has this great opportunity to meet with this nationally famous teacher. And he comes and he's quite straightforward. I have just entered the monastery. Maybe he'd been practicing for 10 or 20, 30 years, who knows, but he is just entering this monastery. As you and I, it was mentioned last night, some of us have done many days and weeks and months of sesshin in different forms, these retreats. But yet, each one of us, we are new, coming today, this Saturday morning, this Saturday afternoon, here, entering new, entering for the first time. And he says, please teach me. Please give me your teaching. On one level, quite a straightforward request. And reminds me of the student who is asking all kinds of questions to the Zen teacher about the philosophy of Zen and the meaning of this word as opposed to that word. And the teacher offers him some tea. He holds his cup out, and the teacher pours. And continues to pour even as the liquid, the tea, flows out over the cup. And the student says, please stop. What are you doing? The cup is full. And the teacher says, this is like you are. You come with a full cup. Of course, just to show up, the student has some courage to come before the Zen teacher, especially someone of Jiao Zhou's stature. But this student apparently comes asking for teaching, doesn't come to demonstrate how wise he is or what he already knows. And so this attitude of asking, of coming. Sometimes we say coming empty-handed. Going to Doksan, sometimes we may feel like we have to have something special. I had a student once come in and said, I'm sorry, but nothing is going wrong right now. What should I do? And I reassured this student that it was okay when things don't go wrong or when things do go wrong. You don't have to come to the meeting with some huge question. You don't have to come with anything except we say to come as yourself. Turns out this is quite difficult to do since we're all so well skilled in trying to manage people's perception of us, wanting to make sure our friends and co-workers and teachers think well of us. But this student, this monk says, I'm new to the monastery, please teach me. Zhao Zhou offers his first teaching. He does not go into the nature of the Dharma, or what awakening is, or the three treasures, or the four bodhisattva vows. He begins by saying, "Have you eaten your rice gruel?" Quite a wonderful a demonstration, in some way cutting through the problem of words. Words can be so difficult, and we use them because that's how we are as human beings, and so useful in pointing some direction. But Zazen is not a matter of using the right words. In fact, if someone is using a lot of Zen words, it's often an indication that they haven't yet digested, they haven't yet learned what those words might mean, might point to. So Zhao Zhou says, "Have you eaten your rice gruel?" On one level, and inquiring to the student, have you eaten? But of course, many layers to these koans. So have you tasted the Dharma? Maybe. And the student says, "Yes, I have." Maybe he means he has eaten his rice gruel. Maybe he thinks Zhao Zhou is just speaking of that, but not truly seeing this great presentation. And then Zhao Zhou famously says, then wash your bowls. Again, wonderfully down to earth. And in some ways, an illustration of one of the things that has delighted me about this Zen way from the very beginning. Being the son of a Presbyterian minister, I grew up being used to lots of words and lots of lofty ideas about this and that. And Zen has a wonderful way of cutting through these lofty ideas, or maybe we might say pointing to where the sacred is, where is awakening, where is the Dharma. Zhao Zhou just says, "Wash your bowls."
David just looked over at me, and I think that's his nonverbal signal that he'd like me to take over. So I'm going to assume that's what he meant. And continue this investigation into this koan, this moment in time that was preserved. So many centuries ago, these two people had this dialogue. One of the ways we have to encounter koans is in a very personal way. We have to imagine that we're the characters in the koan. So if you're in the situation of meeting with a Zen teacher, and we did bring this up last night when we were looking into why we're here, somebody said, "I'm here to wear out Doksan." That's at least my recollection of what they said. And coming into Doksan as this monk, what was he asking? He's asking for the teachings. He's asking to be instructed to have the Dharma pointed out to him. And hopefully this is what we as Zen practitioners are always engaged with in the world. We want the Dharma, which sometimes we feel very far away from, or we don't understand, or we try to figure out. We want it to be revealed to us. in the encounter between teacher and student, which is such a hallmark of Zen practice, and which we'll be engaging in later on today and tonight and tomorrow. We come in, as David was saying, with empty hands, and also with a kind of longing, a wanting something. And so how we show up is so important. You may notice that sometimes you get feedback about how you're showing up, and you think, well, why is that important? But the way we show up in public on the Zoom screen here, the way we show up with our teachers, indicates something underneath whatever we're thinking or trying to put into words. Even to call it longing maybe is too much. I love that David told the story about the student whose cup flowed over. I sometimes, actually, I think I've mentioned this to a few of you, think of people like that as full cup people. It's true of all of us at some point. We think we know something and we come in to the encounter and we already have something planned to say or some idea or the grounds for some debate. We want to show up as the one who knows. And in Zen practice, we really look at that as a temporary obstacle to having an empty cup, to really coming in and showing up as ourselves, the way we happen to be. It's not possible to plan this because every moment we show up as some other version of ourself. And in Doksan, those of you who've done Doksan at the temple know the feeling of waiting and waiting and waiting in the seat outside the Doksan room for the next person to leave. And then you come in and you have your meeting. The same thing kind of happens here on Zoom. You don't know when you're going to be coming in, but the jisha, the attendant, will say, next three people are so-and-so, and maybe your name gets called, and then you know at some point soon you're going to have a doksan. And then the planning mind begins to take over. What am I going to say? What am I going to do? Oh, no. Well, I better come in with some insight. Or, oh, well, Dave and Melissa are talking about coming in with an empty cup. Oh, I'm going to do that. I always remember, this is how I remember the story, a story that David's teacher, George Bowman, told about meeting with the famous Zen master Shinryu Suzuki Roshi, who wrote Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, and he was going to have a doksan with him. And he knew that he had to be careful. He had to come in and, you know, be prepared for anything. If Suzuki Roshi asked, have you had your rice gruel? He would know that that was code for something. And there is a way of understanding these dialogues that way. But really understanding that this person in this dialogue had come in and asked for instruction. And the question that Jiajo asked was not a non sequitur. What, as David just said, what have you tasted? What do you know? Show me yourself. And beautifully, the monk says yes to that question. Whatever the question means on the deepest level, he answers yes. He shows up in some wonderful, present, positive, really, way. Yes, yes, yes. Whatever he means by it, I don't know. So anyway, George was prepared for some kind of secret teaching. And the first thing that Suzuki Roshi apparently asked him was, what is your name? And George thought, I've heard koans like this. This is, what am I? And he was just flabbergasted. He couldn't say anything. And so Suzuki Roshi rang his bell and dismissed him. And this happened a few times. And finally, Suzuki Roshi, in some meeting down the road, said, so what is your name? And George finally said, George. And Suzuki Roshi said, oh, thank you. Thank you, George. Let's continue. Sometimes it's just so simple. Have you eaten? Have you had breakfast? Have you touched whatever it is that your life has presented to you? That's the question. That's, in a way, what we're looking for in Doksan, this elemental Doksan encounter hundreds of years in the past, more than 1,000 years in the past, is just like what we encounter now. And so your job, our job as Zen practitioners, is to notice anything that we put in the way of clear showing up. We sometimes say, and it's often a commentary in some koans, that somebody shows up and says something and the commentary is fully exposed. But that's kind of scary to do. How can you fully expose yourself to someone? Maybe you don't know them very well, or you certainly don't trust them. Maybe you have issues with authority, or you have some ideas about what authority is and should be in Zen. All of these ideas fill your cup, and then it's impossible to really show up fully exposed with empty hands, with an empty cup. The maybe that's a deeper koan, a deeper question. What is it to fully show up? And one of the lovely things about this koan is that Zhaozhou, in asking that question, and the monk in responding, yes, asks the monk to keep going. He doesn't, he could mean some deep esoteric thing about, well, if you've had an awakening experience, or if you know something, or if you're clear about something, you better keep working and clean up whatever you discovered. Could mean that. But on a much deeper level, what does it mean to wash your bowl? When we work with this koan formally, if you're doing koan study, this is what we're interested in looking into. What does it mean to have had rice gruel and then to wash your bowl? In a way, we've been pointing to this when we give instructions for our in-between practice, the practice that happens between the formal practices of sitting and walking, chanting and listening to Dharma talks and going to Doksan, this amazing opportunity that Zoom sessions give us to not separate one form of practice from another, to recognize that because everything is the Dharma and everything we encounter is the Buddha nature, and everything is also the Sangha, the community of practice, that means that everything, everyone, we ourselves are always demonstrating the Dharma. Right now, in this moment, a bird just called outside our window. That's the Dharma calling to us. The air is cool against my skin right now. That's the Dharma calling. The feeling of being a little tired, a little headachy, a little sniffly, also the Dharma. In this practice, nothing is excluded. Have you had your rice gruel? Did you hear the bird? Do you feel your breath entering your body and leaving your body? The answer over and over and over again has to be yes, yes, yes. If we hide out and try to show up as somebody that we're not, then we lose a tremendous opportunity to meet with somebody who also has emptied their cup. Two empty cups maybe toasting each other. Two hearts resonating together, who two people have decided that the most important thing in this suffering world, this world where people are so cruel to each other and to other beings, this world where there's so much death and destruction, we might even say evil, all of this arising over and over again. Somebody said last night, and I was so touched by it, that they were world weary, world weary. We can get weary. We can get tired from all of the assaults on our being, from the external world, and also even from our internal states. All the different parts of ourselves arguing with each other, telling stories about our inadequacy or our adequacy. It's a lot. So Jajo simply asks this one question. Shunryu Suzuki asks this one question. What is your name? Have you had breakfast? A simple, simple question. Can we answer simply? Can we be present? Can we investigate together what it means to be human? And then can we go forward to meet everything? When the bowl is empty, can we wash it? When it's time to lift up our hands and bow, can we wholeheartedly lift up our hands and bow? When it's time to chant, when it's time to stand, when it's time to sit down, can we enter each of these transformational states fully? And the transformational states, which seem physical, the standing up and the sitting down and the washing and the walking, are nothing compared to the transformational states that happen during our Zazen. Our Rinzai ancestor Hakuin says in the Song of Zazen, essentially, that there's nothing to compare with the practice of Zazen. It contains everything. Shakyamuni Buddha said at one point that the whole world rises up and fades away in this one body. How can you know this for yourself? Well, already well on the way to doing that, just by deciding to come to a sesshin, to sit, to be present to our own experience, to taste the rice gruel, and then do whatever comes next, to wash our bowl. This koan ends with the monk understanding, not with the monk had a great enlightenment experience where ponies and unicorns danced in the rainbow world. He simply understood. Nothing fancy, just another version of yes. Yes. This is what we have to practice saying to the world, even when we feel like saying no and hiding and running away and protecting ourselves. Zen is partly a way of developing the courage to face what's here. This is not an easy practice. This is not a rest and relaxation practice. This is not about de-stressing or being calm or happy, although those things do happen. It's not about gathering wisdom and knowing everything there is to know about Zen and Buddhism. It's about learning to read our own hearts through our own simple, straightforward experiences. The first line of Wu Men's poem, Wu Men, who collected these stories also such a long time ago in the 1200s, many centuries after Jiaozhou lived, but they were stories, as David was saying, that had been passed around, famous story. Did you hear what happened with this guy who came to learn from Jiaozhou? And he gathered them together, wrote these poems. I love the first two lines of the poem, because it is so very clear. It takes a long time to realize. We add on and add on. We say we put a head on top of our own head. We are constantly accumulating barriers to the simple feeling of the breath entering the body and the breath leaving the body, to the simple call of the bird, to the simple twist of the stomach when we have a stomach ache, to the simple life that is being presented to us not by anybody, but simply by circumstances, by being in a human body, one moment after another. Because it's so very clear. It's right here. It's in the taste of the rice gruel. It's in the willingness to receive instruction, pointing out instructions, we call them. Not information, not something that we don't already know at the deepest core of our being. So a monk came to Zhaozhou and said, "I have newly arrived at this monastery, please teach me." And Zhaozhou said, "Have you had your rice gruel?" The monk said, "Yes." Zhaozhou said, "Wash your bowl." The monk understood. Thank you. So please relax your posture, and we'll have our Dharma dialogue now. Michael will be joining us sometimes to respond, and we will, I'll call on you when you raise your Zoom hand. And your opportunity here is to ask a question or make a comment, and we will do our best. Doesn't even have to be about the Dharma talk you just heard or the koan. It can be about Sasheen, about your experiences so far, or it can be about something you've been wondering about. So everything is allowed. The main thing is please show up as yourself, and please raise your Zoom hand so we can engage with you. And we will start with Modu.
Thank you for the talk to both of you. And I was really touched by, you know, the simplicity of how you expounded the Dharma, both of you, and the simplicity of how it touched my heart. And so, you know, noticing this simplicity on one hand, but also the coexistent of the profoundness, the fullness of the moment. And it's something about, you know, this simplicity that brings forth the fullness of the moment and how it just touches our heart. And yeah, the simple act of just showing up, acting, doing what needs to be done this very moment, something so soothing and so simple. Mm-hmm. And what else is there to do than just do whatever is in front of you, right? Yeah. So just calling for action, but not like in a like supercharged way, like I need to do something, I need to like, you know, take over the whole world, but just showing up and doing whatever needs to be done.
Yeah, so well put. Thank you, Madhu. And I think this simplicity is so profound and surprising, because most of us are quite sure it's quite complicated. And if we understand everything, if we do this, then we'll have access. And you know, Melissa highlighting Wu Men's, because it's so very clear, right? And as we sit on retreat, as we come together, there's this possibility to see through or let all these other things be and allow ourselves to be touched. And it's like, oh, who would have thought it would just be in this moment, this breath, this step? How extraordinary.
And, you know, also, our minds really complicate things. And the second line of, you know, because it's so very clear, it takes a long time to realize it. It's unbelievable. We are thought-making machines in a way. We're just constantly chattering to ourselves. We can't get rid of that chatter, but we can devalue it a bit. It's very useful for many things, and not so useful for this. So thank you so much, Modu. Let's go to Will.
Thank you for that talk. I feel as though I'm asking a beginner's question, so maybe that's good. Or maybe it's a false beginner, that's the problem. There is in me an ongoing thing that I do where I am struggling with my self-image as someone who, does who falls a little short, and knowing that I have to kind of sit with it and not struggle with it, so then I get on my own case for struggling with it, and so on, right? It sort of builds on itself, and this is what we call neurosis. And I guess I wonder, in the midst of that, it gets so fucking annoying. And yet, wanting it to stop just powers it more. And I'm just wondering, what does one do? Do you just kind of, I don't know, suffer through it and hope that at some point it dies down? I mean, I have had that experience, but it's laborious, and I'm just kind of wondering, if there's some other way to when something in me really wants to return to this self-image and reassure myself that I am failing, right? It's really powerful,
Will, what you're saying is such a beautiful demonstration of how we complicate our lives. Just like a fantastic demonstration. And I bet there are other people on screen who are listening to this talk sometime in the future, mysteriously, who are going to go, yeah, right. Because we cling so hard to what is familiar, because it's really terrifying to move forward into the unknown. I know that I'm a worthless piece of shit. That's just like, hello. But of course, we hate it too, right? I don't want to feel that way anymore. Shut up, shut up, shut up. All of that. The point of part of my understanding of practice is that all these things that are arising, we have a desire to fix them. And that's not perceiving their essence, which is that they in themselves are the Dharma manifesting. How could that be when I think terrible thoughts about myself? Or, the other flip is wonderful thoughts about myself, very common. As you say, this is neurosis, this is narcissism in a way. And everybody has a little smidgen of it, even if you can't be diagnosed as that way. The training here is not to fix things. It's to encounter, right? To encounter our life. And it's really hard to do, which is one reason why we give talks and offer doksan, because it's like to do it by ourselves, there's nothing coming in from the outside, right? Or psychotherapy is also helpful, or various group process things. But just the things that we do here in Boundless Way, they're medicine for the dismissing of phenomena. We don't want to dismiss anything, but we also don't want to favor it and go, oh, right, yeah, that's true. You see how subtle it is. Yeah, and it does have to say wear away, and then it comes right back with a vengeance when it gets triggered, and like, oh, I failed. What kind of a Zen teacher am I? What kind of a Zen person am I? Blah, blah, blah.
And Will, you remind me of another George Bowman story. He used to say, "Our miserable karma becomes our wonderful dharma." So this very thing, in fact, the past couple of days, I've mentioned to a couple of people, I'm glad that you're not who you think you should be, because who you are is so much more than that. And so, as Melissa was saying, there's some great mystery. This is both your problem and your great resource.
Thank you so much.
I really appreciate you bringing this up, Will, because I think everyone on the screen at some level has the same I would say issue, but if we can see that the bowl always needs cleaning if we're going to be eating out of it. Mm-hmm. We'll never get a bowl that's completely perfectly clean if we want to have breakfast. This is part of our life, this continually meeting whatever needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And yeah, sometimes mm-hmm. it's really, really hard.
That's really helpful. I love the idea that I have to have a little bit of gruel left in my bowl, no matter how much I clean it. It's kind of, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Ava. Yeah.
Thank you both very much for your talk. It's endlessly filling up bowl, really. It reminded me of, you invited us to, is it Samu? The practice that we do caring for. And when you invited us, I thought, oh, I had a plan. And I was going to put away, I had a plan.
A plan, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I was going to put away some boxes in a storage area. And actually, when it came to our break, and I looked at them, and I thought, God, no, that's just going to be complicated, heavy. I've got to make sort of intellectual decisions. And no. And then I realized in the corner there was a pile of washing which had just been folded. And before I realized it, I found myself putting away washing. It was a very simple thing. And it just illustrated the huge gap there is between the life which I want or plan to have and the life I'm actually asked to live.
Yeah. Oh, you know what they say in England in the subway system, mind the gap. Right? It's really true. I think another thing, like Will's comment, that we can all relate to, right? That we make plans, and there's such a huge distance between what we think will happen and what actually happens. And often we're disappointed. You know, why didn't this happen? The attitude of a Zen practitioner is to meet this. Okay, so this is happening. Oof, I don't like it, but this is what's here.
Well, and Ava, I hear your appreciation. So you had this plan, and then you found yourself doing something else that was just right for the moment, and you were present with that. You were just putting away the clothes and able, before the whole world becomes clear and the unicorns dance over the rainbow, you have this moment of just doing what needs to be done, and everything is at rest.
And you can see, you use the word break. I try personally to avoid that word because it's really, for me, my whole life is devoted to making this one fabric, right? So everything is practice. And we've been saying, that's what we love about these Zoom sessions. It just really confronts us. Whatever you were doing in your formal Zazen, leaked over into those boxes in the laundry. How beautiful. Really, really beautiful. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jen.
Thank you for the talk. I have a beginner's comment because I am one. in listening to the talk, I mean, there's so many things I appreciated about it. I think one of the things that struck me the most is just this idea of showing up as yourself and not who you think you're supposed to be or other people think you're supposed to be. And for me, that is just so far in such a radical idea. And like one of the things that I learned through a lot of years of therapy is that I almost never make a decision or even contemplate an action before first thinking about like any possible way it will affect other people or like, you know, this idea of who I think I'm supposed to be and how I'm supposed to act. Like I never start from a place of like, where is my heart and mind on this, right? And so I don't know. It's just such an interesting concept, because I feel like even if I wasn't on screen or in front of you all, and if I was just entirely by myself and thinking like, let me just be myself today, like I don't really know how to do that at all. You know, it's just interesting to see. But I do feel like being here is an authentic thing that I am doing. So I guess it's
Yeah.
not really a question, but just a
Yeah,
comment. I don't
no.
know. I don't know who I am, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and again, the reason we do these Dharma dialogues is because each person who speaks for all of us. So what you're saying, I think, is familiar to all of us. And it leads me to really emphasize why we call this practice. Because we have been practicing for many years, many decades, some of us, some other way of being. The contingent, am I okay? Was I okay? Will I be okay? And so it's not just going into Doksan or showing up wonderfully like you have, but as we sit in silence, we are practicing what happens if I just let myself be here, right? Like, do I dare for one breath? Can I breathe out without worrying about the in-breath? And we get to try and do it over and over and fail over and over. In some ways, we're building up new neural networks. We're practicing a way of being that allows the world to be as it is and allows ourself, our poor sad self, to be as we've always been, a real act of courage and compassion.
Thank
Thank
you.
you. Thank you for coming forward like that, Jen, because it may be a relief to know that this practice isn't about changing our behavior or trying to fix ourselves. The awareness of this is enough. Just stepping forward, becoming aware, as you expressed, that's enough.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Lisa.
You still have to
Lisa,
unmute.
can you unmute yourself? I think we can
Yeah.
unmute. Oh, there
Oh,
you
there.
go. You
Okay, there we go. I'm kind of a contrast to Jen, who is a beginner, because I've been practicing too long and my cup is very full. So my intention, since my cup is very full, but I'm still miserable much of the time, is to empty that cup, and to be available to actually embrace the teachings instead of being able to recite various sutras and things. So I really enjoyed your talk, and I love the way the two of you work together to create this beautiful melding of your wisdom. So yeah, thank you. Always the next thing. And I am going to attempt to remove my masks of she who knows something and be available to actually learn what heals. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Lisa. You know what I'm hearing at what you're saying? It is really painful to have a full cup. Ultimately, I've never met anybody that I've gotten to know well who comes at me with a full cup who's happy about it. You know, it's because it's protection, it's a shield, it's a way of protecting ourselves. And when it's not a simple matter to just dump the cup, you know, dump the contents, or even get rid of the cup. I mean, metaphors can only go so far. But to really to have this intention, not to get rid of what's in the cup, but to just experience the fullness of it and how that's connected to a certain kind of psychic pain and protection. That's all you have to do. Just like what we were saying before to Jen, this is not about fixing. You don't need to be fixed. You're already a Buddha. You're a Buddha with a full cup. But the fact that you recognize it is everything. That's the beginning of having another life, having another kind of life. But you can't do it. You can't say, yeah, I'm going to be a beginner. Right? Yeah, you can't. So just to be aware, Thank you, Lisa. George.
Thank you, David and Melissa, for the really wonderful talk. I found myself deeply moved. It was interesting. I had kind of a meta experience. I know of the koan, and I know of washer bowls. And so I had an initial entree into a very intellectualized kind of. So with respect to heart-mind, right? Like I think last night I learned that Sashin is really kind of heart and mind or something to that effect. So I had like the full Monty, right? just found myself emotionally really overwrought. But initially it was mind. And initially it was, David's presentation and so forth. And, wash your bowl. And I'm like, oh, well, I had my own intellectualized interpretation of what that meant. It was a very logical, rational apprehension. Mm-hmm. And then, the conversation moved a bit. And Melissa picked up the string, and it became a whole other experience for me, heart. And it's hard to say it without getting emotional again. But I've recently become involved with someone. I've been through. It's been a rough year for me emotionally, relationally, and the whole idea of kind of being here now, being with Sangha, being in Sashin. It really has been kind of a rebalancing for me. It's been such a welcome, restorative rebalancing this weekend for me. So it's kind of the wash your bowl for me. What it was the gruel has been this relationship that I've become involved with, really just, digging in deep and sampling the gruel and really kind of enjoying it. And now it's time to wash the bowl, right? And that just really just kind of caught me. By surprise a little bit. I was pretty overwhelmed by it, but I truly want to thank you for that. It was really, really a welcome and enlightening piece of sharing. So thank you.
Mm. Well, this is connected partly to Michael's response to Will, that you can't get rid of all the rice gruel in the bowl. It's always going to be a residual something. That's just how our minds work and how memory works and how experience works. You know that. But I'm also struck by the emotional tone that started to come through. And I want you to know, George, that I think I'm speaking for others too, really value that moment when we dissolve a little bit into emotion. It's not that welcome in our culture. So to just feel it and show it like you just did, it's the kind of courage I'm talking about. This is what's here. And then not to say now, maybe people are thinking, oh, when I share, I'm going to have to cry. But that would be a full cup kind of thing. This is just a genuine presence of what happens for you, what's happening for you. And I
in this moment, actually.
In this moment. Yeah. And we don't know what's going to happen in the next moment because we have to wash our bowls.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you so much.
And George, I'm really touched by the word rebalance that you used, because this is an activity. There's no such thing as balanced, right? It's constant, back and forth. It's an activity. It's an activity of the heart mind, not the heart and the mind, or the mind more than the heart.
Right.
It's complete, and it's complete in motion and in life.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rich.
Yeah, this word fixing struck me because I'm critical of certain people in my life who I feel like are always trying to fix, not really fix me, but like I'm trying to share something and they're writing ideas and ideas. But then I found myself on the other side with my older son who was overseas and in a in a crisis, not a medical crisis, but kind of a financial crisis, not really of his making. And in the interim between communications, I developed this plan that I got very attached to, with some help. And I was really proud of myself, man, resourceful. And then I was ready to tell him about it. Then he called back and something happened. I said, okay, I got this plan. He said, no, let me try this other thing. And then I tried this other thing and it worked. So I was really happy for him, but I also thought it was kind of funny. Like, man, I really wanted to be the superhero. Like, mm-hmm. I got this plan. I figured out I saved you. And
yeah. Well, and Rich, thank goodness you had the sense and the experience to shut up.
Yeah.
Right. This is not a small thing.
Yeah.
Especially for those of us that have children. you know, the love comes, and when someone I love is suffering, just like, you know, your friends may want you not to suffer. So wonderful plans, and very occasionally that can be helpful. Shutting up and saying, wow, yeah, let me know how that goes.
Yeah, just being.
So some real wisdom developing with all these decades of practice. I'm really happy for you.
Yeah, thank you. Just abysmal, as I say in
Yiddish. Thank you.
Thanks, Rich.
So just let's take a pause, see if there's something that you want to ask about or say. And please feel free to raise your Zoom hand. Yes, Brad.
I guess it's the very last line of the koan, the monk understood. And I just, you know, I if you asked me to write down three possible ways he understood, I could. and, you know, is one of them more useful than the other? I guess I would say, what do I understand in that moment or this moment? And for me, I guess, because you, Melissa, you brought in, I mean, maybe he needs to really wash his bowl, or maybe he did and he gets the metaphor of it or something like that. What I get is I just need to take the next step, you know, head off to the dormitory or something. Like that's the teaching, but that's only one outcome, I think. So when you go into Dokusan, like, is there one lesson in that line, or is it the thing that comes out in that moment? You know, I just trying not to work too hard in Dokusan.
So in the koan curriculum, there are particular ways of looking at this and understanding that we are looking for. But each one of these koans contains a lifetime of wisdom. And so sometimes we say, you know, if you're doing the koan curriculum, well, I passed that koan. But, you know, Michael's great analogy, the bowl, maybe it was clean yesterday, but it's always coming back to it. And what we're really looking for in Dokusan and working with koan, or the koan of yourself, we're all working with that koan, is some presentation of how it is in the moment. We're not looking for the right presentation. We're looking for how you are meeting this koan, or meeting your life, as people have been showing up in the Dharma dialogue. We're looking for how you're meeting your life. And as Michael too said about balance and rebalance, a fixed position means the end, right? Fixed position will not get you there. And you as a dancer know that. Balance is dynamic. And aliveness Just as soon as you make up the rule, okay, I understand now, then that rule is yesterday's wisdom, which is not enough for today. So we're looking for this moving into, we're looking for taking chances. We're looking for really seeing how it is. Yeah. Thank you, Brad.
Yeah, sometimes I've been thinking you just don't want to wash your bowl. You know it's the right thing to do at the moment. You can't think of an alternative, and you just don't want to do it. And it's, I don't know, being with not wanting to do something is a curious thing.
So you're talking about yourself, right?
I'm talking about myself. Yes. Sometimes I just don't want to wash
my hair. That was a little confusing. I didn't know who you were talking to. Yeah. So here we are, right? The arising of phenomena can arise in any way, any condition, any form. And sometimes it rises up as, I don't wanna. And that's the Dharma too. That's another example of it. So how do you meet that? That's the question. And you know, David's response to Brad is so important, because this is not a matter of getting it down. I know what to do now, but it's a matter of almost always being surprised by life. Okay, now I have the I don't wanna mind that's coming up. How can I meet that? How can I meet that? Over and it doesn't matter what it is. It could be, you know, I'm the master, I'm the idiot, I'm the one who always does their bowls, I'm the one who just doesn't want to wash dishes. It doesn't matter. That's your that's the raw material you get to work with. And it's always different, and it's kind of unique, but also, as we know, as we're listening to each other, not so unique. We can identify with what other people are saying.
And oftentimes I found that when we stand in opposition of something, say a dirty bowl or a teacher or life, there's a deep underlying desire that says, please teach me. What's here? And it can feel hidden there, but just the opportunity there to see that.
Beautiful. And maybe last one, Jenny.
Yes, thank you for the talk. This koan, I keep thinking of the Karate Kid, where he goes, he shows up and says, teach me. And he says, wash my car. And it goes on for a while. And it's like, okay, this is my payment for receiving the teaching. I have to do these chores. And then eventually, wait, that is the teaching.
Right.
And when you're talking about Doksan and just that preciousness of any interaction, right?
Yeah, there are no failures in Doksan, right? And there are no failures in life. If everything is something to be met, then okay, this is happening. I have to meet this. Wow. And think about it. I mean, it's just so broad, right? The person wins an election and we're thrilled, and another person wins and we're horrified. And that's what we get to meet. And terrible things happen to people and animals, unbelievably evil, mean, cruel things all the time, and our hearts turn over and our stomachs squeeze. That's what we get to meet over and over and over again. And then I love this koan so much, because then the meeting happens, and then there's the washing of the bowls. Now what do? There's always something to do. It's never complete.
And I love this, you know, I thought washing the car was the payment. We could say, I thought my Zazen was what I was doing to get something else. I thought I was chanting so that something else would happen. And this realization that we're not living life for some other time, but right here, in these words we exchange. Oh, so very clear.
Yeah.
The Karate Kid story reminds me of a story from Tibetan Buddhism about Milarepa, who was he had killed people in his family. He was just a rotten guy. And he came to a teacher and asked to be taught. And the teacher kept giving him these assignments to build things and then tear them down. And, you know, part of the process with Milarepa was he had been an angry guy. He was an angry guy. And so he got really angry when he had to build these things and tear them down. And, you know, I thought this was my payment. You want me to build this wall? Okay, I'll do it. You want me to build a tower? I'll do it. Now you're asking, he had to work with the arising of the frustration and the delusion, right? I thought this was the payment is what arose. I actually never saw The Karate Kid, but I've heard the story so many times, I feel like I have. But that intermediate place that we have to go through is valuable. It's not about getting to the other side and going, oh, you were teaching me. That's great. But right in the middle, when, why are you having me do this? I don't like it. I don't. That's also value. That's truly valuable to meet those things.
Yeah, the getting mad.
The getting mad. I mean, aren't you mad sometimes? Or a lot of the time, I am a lot of the times. Things are not going the way I want them to, and so it's a natural reaction. And when we stop fighting it, it's got power in it. It's really powerful to be frustrated, irritated, angry. Just like it's really powerful to be sad and grieving, and it's really powerful to be happy and joyous too. So I think maybe with that we'll end. So please return to your upright sitting posture.